Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans.
And tonight, Joe, this is the night to actually wake the kids and phone the neighbors. This is something we talk about it a lot, but actually this is the time to do it.
Sound the alarms, ring the bells.
Yeah, I agree. Because we have Zara Mahler, star of the screen, also the stage, Joe.
And sound.
What?
And sound.
And
recording artist, professional recording artist.
Oh, yes. That's Zara Mahler. Yeah. And I actually listened to some of the music and it's really good. You did a cover of, what was the cover that's on
Revolution
that?
Army?
Yes.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Army. And a fantastic really good cover. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great song, but a fantastic cover of it too.
I hope this sounds complimentary, but you have a very Tori Amos vibe. And it's meant to be an extreme compliment. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Good.
Yeah.
And I love the song Archer, by the way.
Archer.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
That was another good one. Do you have more music coming out, by the way?
I do, actually. I'm in the middle of, before the pandemic, I was working with three producers on three different albums, and that slowed down for obvious reasons. But I am still working with one of them currently on same producer that did Euclidean, which is the album that has those two songs you guys referenced. His name is Leo Z, and we've been working a ton, and I'm so excited to share some of I guess this next album that we're doing. It's going to be in the same vein as the last one, a little bit darker. This next one, and I'm pretty excited about it. So that's
Euclidean was 2016.
Yeah.
Man, you're about due.
Yes, you know, I am. I am.
So you can pick up the pace a bit here.
Yeah,
we need to get that turned out.
I hear that a lot too, but I mean, you know, it's also something I used to feel a lot of pressure. I used to feel like I was behind. But I'm kind of realizing that taking length between is actually really important for me as a musician. I really, really spend a lot of time in my writing and really like to kind of understand conceptually and emotionally what I'm trying to say. So, you know, I am due. You are correct, but it's
Well, U2 takes a long time between their albums too. I think they do like 4 or 5 years. So there's something to that. And it, you know, some bands, they produce albums every year, or singers do, and each one isn't that great. So it's like, why not take your time and do it, you know? Then the ones that you do release will be that much better.
Yeah, go big or go home. You know, exactly. If you're gonna do it right.
So Zara is, as I said, she is a screen actor. She's a Broadway alumna and a recording artist. What show on Broadway did you do?
I did a couple things. I did a show that was a new work called Soul Doctor. And we were up for a little while at Circle in the Square in New York. And I also did the national tour, Broadway tour of Wicked, the musical.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's great. Joe and I also have a theater background. We were theater majors at a little school in Iowa.
No, Matt was a theater major.
You weren't?
You know, we've been such good friends for so long, but yet every episode we record, you seem to misplace or misspeak about something in my past.
Well,
I was an art major.
My versions are always way better than yours.
I know. I wish I could live the life that you think I lived. Because I'd be probably in a totally different place right now.
Well, he worked in Chicago as a nipple eraser for Sears Roebuck
catalog. Yes.
And I will live by that story till my dying day.
Whether it's true or not. Yeah. But
I guess it wasn't true. He didn't actually get promoted to that job.
No, I didn't stick around long enough. You got to really work your way up the corporate ladder to get to racing nipples off.
He was a graphic designer. Mm-hmm. You know, but my stories are so good. I wish that your life was the way I tell it.
So do I.
So Zara is an emerging dynamic and multifaceted talent, Joe. And she is she's been on the big screen. She starred in the Pierce Brothers' highly acclaimed creature feature, The Wretched, which came out this year, I believe. right? Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
And I unfortunately, it was a horrible year for it to be released, but I think, see, the funny thing is you and I have crossed paths a few times, oddly. I've followed you and we've been friends on Instagram somehow for since I looked on there the other day and it said since 2016, and I don't even know how we wound up
really
following each other, but I was going to see the premiere of the movie that you were in, Nightmare Cinema, which is, if you guys out there haven't seen it, it's a really good anthology. Mick Garris and Joe Dante, which is the person, the director you worked with. Mickey Rourke was involved. A lot of really, you know, big time talents, both behind the camera and front of the camera, were working on that. And so a friend of mine asked me if I wanted to go to the premiere over there at Destiny Typewriter. And I was like, okay, sure. So we go. And when I'm in line, I'm looking at Instagram and you had posted something about your being in that movie and it's premiering and you were going to be there. So it was kind of funny.
And actually, the wretched, you know, you said it was a bad year for cinema. I disagree because you guys held like an unofficial title.
Yeah.
You were the number one movie in the box office for like 5 weeks straight.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For most movies, it was a bad year. But for our movie, the conditions of this year actually ended up benefiting the Wretched. We were number one in the United States box office, number one for I think 5 weeks straight. I think you're right, Joe. And I think the only movies that fall into that category are Avatar and Titanic. So it was a very bizarre sort of stroke of luck for this film.
I don't shortchange yourself. The movie was great. I think if it had come out in 2019, you still could have held number one in the box office for at least 4 weeks. I thought it was very good.
Absolutely. Not because the movie isn't strong. I certainly, you know, I loved working on that piece. I'm thrilled with the final product. Only because indie film doesn't always get an opportunity to really be in the spotlight, you know. And it really did allow this, and I'm so passionate about indie film. I think that it's such a beautiful thing to be able to see art that's fantastic and strong and interesting and captivating because of the art form, you know, not because of names there was a really lovely thing about it getting a chance to really be seen for what it was.
Yeah. No, and it came out right away. Did it come out simultaneously on streaming as well, or did it come out later on streaming?
I think it did. If I remember correctly, it was theaters. I mean, we were supposed to have a theatrical release, like a larger theatrical release. And I remember feeling disappointed when I found out that wasn't happening because, you know, as an actor working on something like that, my generation, we went to the movie theaters. It wasn't streaming. So that felt like such a dream at the time. But it ended up being primarily, I think, drive-in movies. And I guess there was a release in other theaters. They just didn't promote it widely to be respectful, as far as I know.
And that's kind of the interesting thing about that movie is that it's perfect for drive-ins because it is a throwback to the old creature features.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, you're front and center in this thing. That's you on the poster, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah.
Now, we'll get to that in a minute. I want to finish let me get through your bio. In 2019, she starred opposite Mickey Rourke and Richard Chamberlain. That's right. Richard Chamberlain was in that Nightmare Cinema, receiving rave reviews for her work under the direction of horror legend Joe Dante, who was, if you don't recall, Joe, the director of Gremlins, The Howling, and many other movies, actually. She also recently guest starred in Fox's hit show 9-1-1. Additional film and television credits include Beyond Skyline, Ghost Whisperer, Saltwater. Saltwater is one that I really want to see because it seemed, well, I read the description of it and it seemed really interesting to me, but I'm having trouble locating it.
Yeah. You know? It's not located. It's not out there right now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it wasn't technically released. I'm close friends with the director and I've been trying to track it down. It's a process. I mean, the thing about it is that I don't know much personally. I haven't really been on the side of releasing films. So, I'm interested in trying to push it out there, and have it be seen. I think it's an important film. It's a very, very intense, raw, gritty film, but I'm proud of it. And I think, the subject matter is really important. But I will keep you posted, Matt. Like, as soon as it is viewable, then I'll let you know.
Yeah, that'd be great because that seemed like a really interesting film. And it definitely, at least from the way it read, it seemed like something that would be a kind of a powerful part for you to play.
Mm-hmm.
100%. Zara has starred in Broadway productions such as Wicked and Soul Doctor. Other theater credits include Cabaret, Rent, which was directed by Neil Patrick Harris. How was that working for it with him?
Great. He's a really humble, sweet, really kind soul. And, you know, just some of his notable characters, I think people expect a different sort of persona, but he was absolutely lovely to work with.
Nice. Yeah. That's always great when you meet somebody like that and they're better than you were expecting because so often that's not the case, but, or at least sometimes it's not the case. And then, other credits. Oh yeah. Appropriate at the Mark Taper Forum in downtown Los Angeles. She's also a singer and a songwriter. Zara is currently collaborating on multiple new albums with Grammy Award winner Freddie Mux. Is it Mux or Mukes?
Mukes, Freddie Mukes.
Mukes, Freddie Mukes. Okay. Edit that, Joe. Composer,
why we put that shirt on the bio.
Composer, producer Leo Z and Grammy Award and nominee and producer Brian Kihu. She has composed songs for popular Korean recording artists, EDM records or groups, and theatrical productions. Her debut album, Ophidian, can be found on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music, and all the other major online platforms. And believe me, you should look it up. It's a really good album.
Definitely worth a few listens.
Definitely, yeah. So, you know, there's one thing I always want to ask people when they've worked with a director that I really like. And Joe Dante is one of those directors that I really like him. And he seems like a really nice guy too on top of it. I don't know if that's true or not, but he obviously has this history. He worked closely with all kinds of great directors, but then he's a great director in his own right. How was it working with him? And did you find him to be, accommodating and helpful as an actor what was his style like?
Working with Joe Dante has been one of the highlights of my, career, I would say. You know, it's funny because I have, it was funny to be cast by Joe Dante because I was exposed to horror films way too young. There was no, my parents were not paying attention. My dad specifically was not paying attention. And this is when movies were unedited or censored and they were on TV. And so a child could just watch them. And one of the first most traumatizing movies I saw was The Howling. I think I was like 6 or 7 or something. And that was Joe Dante's movie. And so, decades later being cast by him was kind of funny and ironic. Joe Dante is such a professional. He's an incredibly gracious director. And, you know, one of the things I'll say about him, other than the fact that actually as a director, he has such a clear vision of what he wants. He knows exactly what he wants, and he knows exactly how to communicate, not just to the actors, but to the crew, how to get what he wants. And working with somebody of that status who really is so comfortable in their voice and knows how to express it. It's just a joy to be able to collaborate with somebody like that. But aside from that, one of the things that was really special about working with Joe, that man remained humble and kind and gentle and calm and centered every second. You know, never raised a voice. And being on a film shoot is usually, it's high stress. It's a high stress, experience. Things are always in any production, like, you know, big budget, low budget, doesn't matter. It's just like so many moving pieces and really long taxing hours. And so it's very uncommon, for somebody to really maintain their composure so gracefully. And there is something incredibly beautiful that happens when the captain of the ship, who is the director, treats everyone else with that really genuine respect across the board. It trickles down and everybody feels respected and valued, and it makes for really great product, really great art. Because you actually function as a team. And, you know, I remember while working with Joe thinking, okay, this is an example to all people. It was wonderful. He was wonderful to work with.
Yeah. It seemed that everything that you described, it just seems, I've only seen him a few times, but it just seems that would be true for sure. Joe, did you have something?
Yeah. Speaking of watching horror movies way too young, like all of us did, did you always want to be an actress when you grew up, or is this something you just stumbled on at a later age, or like teen years? Or
I like to say it picked me. It wasn't even that I wanted to be an actor. I kind of came out that way. I came out as an artist. I've always really just been an artist in many different ways. But when it comes to music and acting, I just knew. I never questioned what I wanted to do. And to be completely honest, it's kind of these two avenues, acting and music. They're the things that inherently, that's where my strength is. And I feel very strongly about that being my purpose, storytelling, in that way. So I cannot think of a time ever in my life when I considered something else.
Yeah. That's, I think that it's such a crazy career. You'd almost have to be that, crazy about it to stick with it, which I never was. Like after college, I came out here for that. I'm in Burbank, but I came out here for that. And I just didn't have that desire to, to put myself.
If there was anything else that I was really good at, or anything else that I was passionate about, I would 100% pick that other thing over being in the entertainment business. But you know, my dad was an actor. And actually, I think one of his film debuts, or is it his first movie? I'd have to check this. I don't want to get this wrong, but he was in Friday the 13th, The Final Chapter. Like, he's done some horror films as well. And Police Academy. And he was a recurring on Seinfeld. He had quite a career. And, there's something about having a parent who was in the business. My dad was not, he didn't sugarcoat anything for me. When I said I wanted to do this, he really laid out for me that if I took this career path, I had to be prepared to, you know, bite and claw my way through it. And he also really prepared me and said, this is a career choice in which you really have to have a thick skin and understand that rejection is going to be constant. And prepped me for it and explained right at the get-go, when it comes to auditioning in this career, you know, you're going to hear no, the word no, 100 times for every yes, if you're lucky. And so I think there was something really important about him, you know, kind of from his own experience, being able to share that with me.
Speaking of which, what was that aha moment? What was that one role that you finally got that you were like, that's my break. I'm in this business for good. I've made it, for lack of a better term.
I guess there have been a couple. I mean, it's sort of the way that my career has gone. I guess it's been like a non-linear process, you know? So it's kind of a big one for me was when I booked Sally Bowles in Cabaret, actually in Chicago at Oakbrook Terrace Drury Lane in Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sally there, and Sally's such a monster of a character. And there was something really big for me at that point in my life about taking a chance, flying to New York to audition for this enormous role and going and doing that. I mean, you know, the Broadway stuff was obviously, those were marked moves for me. I booked a recurring on Major Crimes, which is a show that was on TNT as Mary McDonald's daughter. So that was really, really exciting. Another beautiful family to work with. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I have like a specific, I just feel like I've, sounds cliche, but I feel like I've just like had a lot of blessings where I've gotten to work on some really incredible projects with some really beautiful creatives.
Yeah. I suppose if you got cast as the lead in some giant film, you know, that's a aha moment, but I think it's more a series of victories, you know,
some people have a big break and then other people build their career. Just, you know, it's the night is young.
Well, looking at the Wretched, now that was, it seemed to me, and I could be wrong, but it seemed to me it was a physically demanding role for you because, and I don't know if how much makeup they put on you, or did you lose weight for not that, you know, but you were emaciated.
Careful.
In that
scene. No, I'm not.
And there were some moments where it almost looked like they had a prosthetic or something, or was that just you contorting yourself in that way?
Because and you're not referring to the actual when you see the monster, right? Because there's sort of, you know, there's so much body swapping, and also just for the very smart Joe to stay careful, especially in this climate.
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah.
But I will tell you just for the remainder of the interview, I am not precious or sensitive about any of that. There's okay. Nothing you guys can't ask.
It really doesn't matter, Matt. No. She called me smart. That's all that I'm taking away from this. So.
No, my point was that a lot of times an actor will lose even more. Not that you have to lose weight, but an actor will lose even more weight for a role. And there were a lot of moments where you have to be very vulnerable out there, and your body is kind of contorted in a way that it just seemed. How much of that was you and how much of that was?
Basically, do I need to be worried about spoilers?
No.
You know what?
To anybody listening, spoiler.
Spoiler alert. There we go. You get that out of the way. If you haven't seen it yet, you're an idiot. Go see it. Hit pause, watch The Wretched, and then come back and listen to the rest. Back.
Yeah.
We got it handled.
Yeah, so it's.
I mean, it's not a huge spoiler that something happens with you because that happens fairly early.
Spoiler, right? So when the witch is in Abby's body, any time that you see any version of Abby, which is my character, that's me, including like the contortion and the twitching and like all of that stuff.
Okay.
Once we're later in the film, you know, and we have the reveal of the monster, I'll say.
Yeah.
That's a really incredibly talented actress and contortionist named Madeline was, and she's, I was not involved there once we're underground.
Also. Yeah.
Okay. But for me, yeah, I have no like training in contortionism, but I've always been sort of like very flexible and sort of bendy and yeah, I think I lost a little bit of nothing major. I mean, I'm generally a small framed person.
Right. Yeah. But you didn't go into it saying I need to lose even more to make myself look even more emaciated for this part.
Moments. But I always take that into account when I do any role. And I mean, it's essentially there's something inhabiting a body that's no longer alive and walking around. So, this was interesting. I mean, I've been in this business for such a long time that I'm pretty desensitized to my own like nudity on set. And there's something about like when it comes to nudity, when it's a horror film, when it's not gratuitous, you know, it wasn't sexualized nudity. Right. It was actually scary. Yeah. And that's something that, I don't know, when you step into a character like this, for me as an actor, I don't feel exposed because I'm inhabiting that character. So it's actually a very powerful feeling. I think that if I were playing a different role, I might have a different experience. But I liked that. I remember when the directors like asked me if I was comfortable with that scene, and they were, I think, a little trepidatious about it. But when they explained and they showed like their storyboarding, I was like, sign me up. Let's do this. This is, and actually that scene that you're referencing is one of my favorite scenes in the movie. And, it's chilling, child there. And, it was fun. A cold movie, cold shoot.
Hey, speaking of physically demanding, I have a question because I'm not sure if you're aware. Matt and I are from the Midwest. That's where we were raised. I'm actually coming to you live from Davenport, Iowa. I come from a long generation of hunters. So I got to ask, have you gutted many deers? Because you looked awful comfortable around that deer carcass. It threw me for a bit of a loop in that movie.
I've definitely never gutted anything. it's funny because that was my first day on set. So I think I said this in another interview at some point, but my experience of my first day on that was like, I got off the plane, driven to set, and they were like, here's a bucket of gore, which had like actual insects in it and a bunch of synthetics. It was like horrifying looking and basically was kind of just doused in gore right off the plane. And I was like, okay, here we go. This is what this is going to be.
Yep. That's setting this tone for the rest of the movie. Yeah, you start off with venison, it can only go down from there. It's downhill.
One of the things I loved about that film, though, that spoke to me about the script, and it is different. The final cut is different than the movie. The Wretched actually used to start with Abby in the car with her son hitting the deer. And that scene, we shot it. It was cut. But there was something so interesting and different and fresh about that script for me, starting this film with a deer being hit and brought back to a house and something crawling out of it. Like it was just.
Yeah. I'm glad you actually cleared that up. I know initially my first thought was, what did she take her son out in the woods and they just, they're bow hunting or something. And what a woman, she's bringing home dinner for the next couple of weeks. That was a nice sized venison you had there. But I guess you hit it with a car. It's a little bit easier of a hit. So.
Sure.
Just big on venison.
Nothing like deer jerky. Not to sound like the epitome of somebody from the Midwest.
Yeah. Well, you went through the ringer a lot in Nightmare Cinema too, because you spent half of that episode, it seems like, with the facial wrap. How much makeup did you have to go through during that?
Well, yeah, I mean, that last scene, the reveal in that, obviously that was full prosthetics. I've never done prosthetic work like that before. It was my first time sitting in a chair for 6 hours, whatever it was. And I you know, we did like a major, I've been cast before, but this was full. And the people we worked with, the makeup department, phenomenal. They did phenomenal work. And I have to say, I have a whole new level of respect and appreciation for actors who go through that type of makeup every day for certain roles. And it's crazy because when you're made up to that extent, like you have to eat lunch and stuff like that wearing, and it's heavy. It's a lot. It's also great. It's mask work, essentially. I mean, you really can become something else. It's amazing how much that can influence the actual craft, like the work of acting to be. But yeah, I guess you're right. Even before the full prosthetics, it was like always some sort of binding and around the face. And
well, a lot of your eyes, you know, because the only thing we saw for a lot of that were your eyes through the thing. Once we got into the actual surgery or whatever,
I would hope they would have brought you food onto set on that last day and not like making you go through a drive-through, you know, with the full prosthetic on.
My character had a scar in that, as you know, and I did. Actually, that was really interesting. That was a part of the story, really. And I did in the scar makeup, because that was more subtle, I did occasionally go and get a coffee or grab food. And it was a great experiment because I got to actually experience what a person with a obvious facial scar goes through. I noticed how many people looked and tried to look like they weren't looking. And I got to bring that into the work, into the character. But in that full, final, horrifying prosthetics, no, I was not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Give someone a heart attack.
That and then you worked, how was working with Mickey Rourke?
You just took my question, Matt. Yeah.
I mean, that was an obvious question. So
yeah, I had a great experience working with Mickey Rourke. He is a character, like the person who he is. He just kind of has this energy that fills up the entire space he's in. And one of my favorite stories about Mickey Rourke, you know, and he's just like this huge human and persona, and he's intense. He was very, very kind. I enjoyed working with him. And actually, sorry, side story, I just finished a song. I just finished recording a song with my producer that's going to be the end titles song from another movie he's in. So technically, that will be released in a few months. So it's another horror movie that he's in called War Hunt. So I guess I'm working with him again in some capacity. Yeah. But anyway, one of my favorite things about Mickey Rourke is something others wouldn't know is he had, at the time, he had a Pomeranian on set with him at all times, as close as possible. Like even when he's filming, that dog is, and the dog's name was Number One, name of this Pomeranian, and Number One is always present when Mickey is there, and just several feet off screen. So it was, you know, I was kind of tickled by that because it's not necessarily what you would expect. But,
yeah, I had heard that. In fact, I had seen when he won the Academy Award for The Wrestler, I think, or some award that I saw him doing a speech, he talked about his dogs and thanking his dogs and saying that the dogs were what saved his life.
Yeah. Yeah. He talked to me as well about his dogs. Very, very sweet. And I'm a dog lover. So.
Oh yeah. 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 Let me see here. Well, one of the things that we do, I don't know if you have one or not.
I have a very important question I got to ask. I was wondering if you're able to tell us anything at all about your upcoming role, the Manson Girls.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, that unfortunately, that project's on hold. It's been on hold for a little while. So I don't know the status. Susanna Lowe is directing that movie, and I was cast as Mary Brunner, which is one of, I think, Manson's wives, and gave birth to his child eventually, but I don't know the status on that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I had to ask.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that too, because That one seems like a pretty interesting project. Yeah. But you haven't even begun filming on that one yet? Okay. So one of the things we do here is we do a ghost story at the end of the episode. So I don't know if you have a ghost story or not, but if not, I do have one that a listener sent in.
Let's do that. I mean, I'm sure I could like dig around and find one, but let's listen to a ghost story from a listener. I would love that. All right.
Well, it's a quick one. And this is Joe's favorite part of the whole episode.
It's early Christmas for me that I get to hear these.
Halloween. It's Halloween year round in my house. So.
Right. Okay.
Same here. Yeah. My wife and I are Halloween nuts. And well, Johnny, or Joe, I'm sorry. Your name is Joe.
We've known each other like 30 years.
Well, the guy who sent it's name is Johnny.
Okay.
So, but your name is Joe, so I'll call you Joe.
Yes.
Joe, there's a guy named Johnny Reynes in Davenport, Iowa, who sent me this ghost story. All right.
Right here in Davenport?
Right here in Davenport, Iowa.
Wow. Not here.
I'm actually
carving up a deer right now.
Yeah, I'm in Burbank right now. But you are in Davenport, and Johnny Reynes sent this from Davenport. It's a bit of a legend combined with his own personal experience, Joe. So I don't know if you know this, Joe, but tucked right on the Mississippi River is McClellan Heights.
I'm very well familiar with McClellan Heights.
McClellan Heights, Zara, is a very nice area of Davenport, Iowa. Very old area, old money.
Huge mansions on top of a hillside overlooking the Mississippi River.
Yeah, rolling hills. It's absolutely beautiful. But it has a darker past. I don't know if you know this, Joe, but Camp McClellan was a Civil War prison and later was turned into a Native American prison. Many deaths happened there. I don't quote me on how many. I don't know, but I know it's in the thousands.
Many.
There are many deaths there. So Johnny did not know all of this when he bought his house across the street from the old McClellan Camp prison. I don't know. He might've still bought it anyway, because it was a beautiful craftsman, but he and his wife, he didn't say his wife's name, but I'm going to call her Jenny. He and his wife, Jenny, bought an old craftsman style home just across the street from Lindsay Park. It's not McClellan Park, I guess it was McClellan Camp McClellan, but they decided to call it Lindsay Park.
Of course.
I'm not sure why that tidbit of information was important to me, but I had
to get our producers and our fact checkers together on that one.
Yeah. So he and his wife, okay, so they bought this house unaware of the atrocities that had happened across the street, or even not atrocity, just people dying. And strange things started happening, Joe, as you might guess. One night, he and his wife fell asleep on the couch watching television. Now, this, if you're aware of what old craftsman houses look like, they have a front porch, a front wooden porch, right? So he and his wife, they fall asleep watching TV, and he hears footsteps coming up the front steps. And you're going to put footsteps in this part, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Don't do the one that it sounds like they're walking down a hall, though. Do one where it sounds like they're walking on a porch.
I'll see what I can find.
So he hears footsteps coming up the front steps and across the porch to the front door and stops. So he kind of looks up. His wife's still asleep, Jenny, and nothing. And he's like, that's strange. And then the footsteps come across the porch over to the front window just to his left. Nothing. So he gets up, looks out the window, expecting to see somebody looking in the window. No one's there, Joe. One day, this is a different day. I mean, that was the end of that segment, I guess. Part two is he and his wife were eating lunch in their kitchen at the kitchen counter. And as he's eating the sandwich, he describes it. He didn't describe this very well, but as he's eating this sandwich, he thinks he sees like something white out of the corner of his eye. He kind of glances and there's nothing there. And he's eating, he looks over at his wife and she's sitting there with sandwich in hand, staring at the doorway with mouth open. And he says, honey, that was his name for her, I guess. What's wrong? And she says, babe, which was her name for him. I just looked up and saw a person standing there in the doorway in a white t-shirt, and he disappeared. Then later one day, one night he's sitting alone in the house watching a movie, and he suddenly he's in the living room. There's stairs going upstairs. He suddenly gets this feeling like there's something upstairs, like something is coming down the stairs. And he gets this feeling so strong that he actually has to leave the house. He leaves the house, calls his wife to come. Calls his wife to meet him someplace, and then they come back home. But these feelings like this seem to have happened to Johnny and his wife periodically until they sold the house 5 years after. That's quite a thing to go through, buying a whole house.
I love how you paint the picture, Matt. I feel like I've gotten to know these people so much now, especially Johnny and Jenny. They're
Johnny
like
and Jenny.
Friends of mine now that I know, you know, it's Honey and
Babe.
Yeah. Honey and Babe. Yeah. Honey and Babe. Cool.
I suppose I could have come up with a more creative name than Jenny. His name's Johnny. But
no, I you sold me on it. It's Jenny and Johnny, Honey
Johnny,
and Babe.
If you're out there,
it's please, stuck up in here now.
Johnny, please message me on Facebook or email us what your wife's name is.
Jenny.
And then we'll say it next time.
I'm going to have to drive through McClellan Heights now and look for Honey and Babe on the mailbox somewhere. So.
Well, they don't live there anymore, Joe.
Oh, it's true. They sold the house. Where'd they go? Do we know?
He didn't say.
Boarding address? No.
He did not say. No, I suppose he doesn't want anyone knowing where he lives after that experience. So that's my big story for this week, Joe. You have to embellish those things a little bit because
the interesting thing is, like, on paper, it doesn't sound like that much, but when you do actually have an experience like that, where you see something and it's unexplainable, it's really intense.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, it'll be intense once we add the sound effects in post.
Oh, yeah. No, it takes it to a whole nother level. You'll love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I trust.
Have you had anything happen to you though?
I've had experiences like that. You know, I'm always hesitant to label the experiences that I've had. I don't not believe in ghosts necessarily. I believe that there are things that are unexplained that I don't have an explanation for, and we don't have an explanation. And I'm kind of one of those people who sort of doesn't believe but doesn't not believe, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
When it comes to these things, I'm just sort of open to, or I guess like humble enough to say, I don't know why or what that is. But yeah, I have experienced things like that. Heard voices before, went to a doctor once about that. But full disclosure, but wonderful thing to say on an interview that
Joe will edit that out.
Yeah, we can cut that right out. Nobody will ever know.
Honestly, I'm at that point in life where I'm just like, listen, this is what it is. And I'm really just like not ashamed of anything. But
Joe, edit out the whole part about where I was talking about weight too. That needs to go.
Because if I do that, then it takes out the part where she called me smart.
Well, that's why, actually.
It's worth it.
I want that.
But yeah, I
have that on a loop.
I've had some strange experiences where I've seen, sensed, heard things that weren't there, you know, and those moments can be really, really intense when they happen. And it's like, you know, it doesn't sound terrifying to necessarily on paper, but when you actually live that type of experience, it can be pretty crazy.
Yeah, you know, I feel like I don't know if they exist or not. It doesn't really matter. I have no, you know, I do like watching those ghost hunting shows just for the entertainment, but I don't really, I would just rather live in a world where there's the possibility they do exist, ghosts exist, and I just
there is.
Yeah, and I'm
we
and
don't
I'm
know.
What's that?
We don't know. That's
right.
The thing.
Yeah. So it doesn't really matter to me whether people try to prove it or not. I like the stories and I find them fun and they're,
it's
you
fun.
Know, yeah.
I like Zara's answer. I mean, that's probably the most realistic answer you could give is I'm humble enough to realize that, you know, this universe is so big and expansive. Who am I to say definitively whether there's other things out there or not?
Yeah.
I think that's the most down-to-earth answer I've heard anybody answer with.
Thank you.
So I appreciate that. I tip my hat to you.
Yeah, thank you. And I mean, I definitely, I think many of us have experienced at least the fact that there are different energies. Places contain the energy inside of one house is different than inside another. And I don't know if that has to do with, gravitational pull or this or that, or like, I don't know what that is, but I do know that, there can be shifts of that nature. And sometimes you're someplace and you feel something and it's not psychosomatic, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, just ask Honey and Babe.
Honey and Babe.
Honey and Babe. Johnny and Jenny, they, you know,
Jenny,
those guys, they had some real experiences, Joe. this has been a great, great episode. Thank you so much for coming. Next week, I think we're going to do our top 10 horror movies of 2020. But this was a fantastic interview. We really appreciate you coming. We're also working on, Joe, somebody else who may be coming in a couple of weeks too that I'm not going to disclose yet, but it's going to be a fun one.
It's called the teaser.
That is a teaser. So please, everybody, hang around. And again, if you're already at this point, I hope that you have woken the kids and called the neighbors because Zara Mahler was on our show and she's an up and coming actor. She's already arrived. Let's just face it. She was in the number one movie this last summer for 5 weeks straight. And she's worked with great directors and she's got some great music out there and great music coming. So everybody go to Apple, what is it? iTunes, Apple Music,
any of the platforms,
Spotify. Yeah. And you
Sam Goody,
Sam Goody, Zara Mahler, or, you know, what was that? Sam Goody was the record store. What was the mall
disc,
record store?
Disc Jockey. Disc Jockey Tapes and Records, Sam Goody.
Yeah. That would be great. Are you on vinyl, by the way?
I didn't do it. I almost did it. I almost did a small release vinyl and I didn't. Maybe for this next one.
It's kind of costly, isn't it?
Pretty costly.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's CDs,
but worth every dime.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much. And thanks everybody for listening and we will see you next time.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure. I had a lot of fun.
Oh, it's been our pleasure.